You're listening to View from the Couch, a podcast about TV, movies, DVD, and just about anything from parents with children. And now, your hosts, Kent and Michelle. Hey everybody, welcome to View from the Couch, a pre-Christmas December 21st. Welcome, welcome. It's almost Christmas. It's hard to believe. It's already on Sunday. Sunday?
Yep.
Wow.
It's here.
And our weather is weird. It's warm and cold and warm and cold. We're hovering around zero right now and have more slush than snow, which is very uncharacteristic for this part of the world this time of year.
Yep.
Very strange. We almost broke a record for cold temperature a few weeks ago, and then like a 100-year cold temperature, and then now we're around zero, and it's slushy.
Yeah.
Weird. Very weird. Well, this will be short and sweet because we have gifts to wrap and carols to sing and egg to nog.
And cookies to eat.
Exactly. Very interesting. Harris Interactive, a research company based out of the U.S., did a survey recently, kind of mid-December this year, that found that 3 in 5 Americans mostly look forward to spending time with friends and family in the holiday season. Wow, I hope that didn't cost them a lot, because I could have told them that for free.
Yes.
Very interesting. Lots of people have things that they both dislike and look forward to at Christmas time, it would seem. On the positive side, almost 3 in 5 Americans, or 58%, say they most look forward to spending time with friends and family during the holiday season. Fewer numbers say they most look forward to holiday dinners and dinner parties, 8%. Finding and giving presents, 7%. Putting up holiday decorations, only 4%. Wow. Watching television specials and hearing holiday songs on the radio, 4%. And getting presents, 2%. While 1 in 10, or 11% of the group polled, say they don't look forward to the upcoming holidays. And I think I was talking to some people that I work with, and if you've lost, I mean, I lost my mom shortly after Christmas, and people that I know have lost loved ones in the last month. So it makes it hard. It makes it kind of bittersweet in a lot of ways. You have happy memories, but then also December for a lot of people seems like it can be memories of someone they lost or a breakup of a relationship or things like that. So it can be hard. As much as it reminds you of good things, it can be a reminder of bad things as well. So the poll surveyed 2,400 people, almost 2,500 adults, online between November 7th and 14th. Now, on the other side, 3 in 10 Americans, or 30%, say the one thing they dislike most about the holidays is spending too much money. While for 1/4, or 23%, it's the crowds. So,
yeah.
And it's funny because Black Friday would probably be even bigger crowds than around Christmas time, potentially, I suppose. Less than 1 in 10 people say that what they dislike most about the holidays is putting up and taking down decorations, 6%. Television specials and holiday songs, 6%. Now, this is all dislike. Finding and giving presents, don't like it, 5%. Eating and drinking too much, 4%. So don't.
Yeah.
That'd be the easy. Little holiday self-control. Spending time with friends and family, 1%. For almost 1 in 5 U.S. adults, 18%, they say there's nothing wrong with the holidays, and they say they like everything about the holiday season.
That's only 18%. That's not very much.
But no,
this is only over a small group.
Yeah, 2,500.
All right. So for 1 month each year, there are holiday songs everywhere you go. And
yes,
some people look
elevators forward, and things.
Some people look forward to it. Other people hate it. And they get tired of hearing the same songs over and over. Some of the songs that people look forward to the most for the holiday season is White Christmas, followed by Silent Night, and then Oh Holy Night.
Interesting.
Rounding out the top five are Jingle Bells and Little Drummer Boy.
Cool. So not Rocking Around the Christmas Tree, which I'm hearing a lot this year.
Yeah.
And not Boney M, too. That's also weird.
Yeah.
But I guess we're a little avant-garde, maybe.
Tied for sixth On the list of songs people look forward to are The Christmas Song and Winter Wonderland, followed by Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer.
Oh, good Lord.
I love that one. Okay. Carol of the Bells, and then Silver Bells. I like Silver Bells, too.
Yes,
haven't heard that one much.
No.
By the end of the season, the one song people wish they will never hear again is Jingle Bells.
Interesting.
Followed by Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, White Christmas, and Jingle Bell Rock.
Hmm.
Rounding out the top 10 are Little Drummer Boy, Feliz Navidad, We Wish You a Merry Christmas, The 12 Days of Christmas, and Silent Night. Interestingly, five songs are on both of them.
Favorite songs and Wish I Could Never Hear Again.
Well, I think at the beginning of the holiday season, you're in one frame of mind, and by the end of the holiday season, you're in the other frame of mind.
True, indeed. And I think I mentioned this on our last show. We have a radio station locally that's playing Christmas carols nonstop.
Yes.
Except for commercial breaks and whatever. So we're hearing a lot. And I started listening to that regularly in November, kind of late November. So, yeah, I'm getting to the point where I'm probably good.
So, yeah.
Besides the Christmas songs, there's also the animated specials and holiday movies that people like. When it comes to favorite holiday animated specials, there's three that are all crammed in top position. How the Grinch Stole Christmas, no big surprise, 23%. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the stop-motion Rankin-Bass, 22%. And, of course, Charlie Brown Christmas, 21%. Further down the list of favorites are Frosty the Snowman, animated, 9%. The Year Without a Santa Claus, also Rankin-Bass, 3%. 1 in 5 people surveyed, or 22%, say they have another animated favorite. Weird. Perhaps, like Connor, it's the Christmas tradition of the SpongeBob Christmas special, which I managed to watch half of, and he won't let me get away without finishing it.
But I think you should finish it.
I keep dodging. For holiday movies, this is a great transition into what we're going to be talking about next, but why don't you take that one?
Okay. There's not one standout winner. 1 in 5 say A Christmas Story and It's a Wonderful Life are their favorites. Well, 16% each say Miracle on 34th Street and National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Less than 1 in 10 say The Santa Claus is their favorite, and 1 in 5 say another holiday movie is their favorite.
You know, and it's weird that Christmas Carol isn't in there. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Or The Sound of Music.
Yes. Ooh, ironically.
Or
yes.
Die Hard.
Or Die Hard, that's right. So what does all this survey talk about? Well, the holidays bring out the best in people and also have the ability to bring out the worst. Whether you're struggling with fellow shoppers to get the hold of the last-minute thing, or gathering with family for an annual showing of Rudolph, on the other hand, or as we've done some of the other specials, the holidays really have something for everyone. And every year and every few years, it seems like there's always a new animated special or something coming out. In fact, one person's favorite can be what someone else can't stand. Hopefully the good will outweigh the bad for most people this year, and you won't end up feeling like you're in the poorhouse, and you won't feel like you have to keep spending to make Christmas merry, and you won't feel like you overate, and you'll feel good overall.
The big one in our house this year is being grateful for what you're given, no matter if you like it or not.
Wow.
That is a big one in our house.
You're not saying that to me, are you?
No, not necessarily.
But I have been...
But your son, who takes after you...
Oh, dear. Yeah, except Connor's poker face needs work.
Yeah, we're talking about that, him and I.
Yeah. My poker face is pretty good, I think. And I'm always grateful for things people get me. I think what it comes down to is and I've said this before, probably, the older I get, the less things I feel I want or need. So random choices for me aren't necessarily good. I think somebody just needs to get me like a goat from World Vision or something like that.
I think so something. Too.
And ironically, I am getting a goat in the form of a new Celtic drum that I'm learning to play. So that'll be fun. So Michelle alluded to this. Well, didn't really allude to it. Hit it right with a giant spiked club. We decided this year, rather than rehash all the other Christmas specials we've talked about and all the, you know, all the obvious usual suspects kind of stuff, we thought we'd take a little bit of a different look. And it's weird because as I'm holding my iPad, it just automatically navigated to the thing I'm about to talk about next, which is creepy because I didn't press anything. But anyway, there you go. ladies first, I think. So what we did was, it's not really a flick swap because we've both seen both, but each of us prefers the movie that we gave to the other person to watch. We've both seen both of them, but yeah, we just thought it would be fun to take a bit of a different look at Christmas entertainment. So do you want to start with you? Let's go ladies first.
Okay. Oh, I'm talking about that one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There's only two choices, and
well,
you're going
first. I was
going
to talk about the other one. That's okay. All right. So this is not the one that I wanted to watch, but I'm talking about this one.
Actually, you know what? Maybe that is a better idea. Folks, okay. Just go with us. We're free-forming it.
All right.
So while Michelle kind of flick-swapped this to me to watch, she will talk about it because it is the movie she likes. Not that I don't like it, but... anyway.
Okay. This was a Christmas tradition at our house, and I think for a lot of North America, because it happens to be on TV in December.
And you know what I think is interesting? That big event films are screened during particular holidays. I think, no question, for ratings.
Probably,
to draw
yeah.
people, probably primarily. But also, like you say, they become traditions for people that you don't just sit down on an average Tuesday night and watch a three-hour movie.
Exactly. Yeah, they're long.
Yes.
And so maybe, you know, people have more time when it's around the holiday season so they can sit down and watch it when mm-hmm. they're not shopping.
Could be.
So, of course, it was The Sound of Music.
Yes.
And I was remembering that, and I may have mentioned this on the show in the past, but I remembered to you and to the kids, because Emily watched with us and Connor watched the end.
Yes.
The first time I ever saw this movie...
I didn't hear you say this. Interesting. Okay.
I think you did. You will. You'll remember when I say it. I was downstairs at my house I grew up in watching TV, and I was watching Evel Knievel about to jump over however many hundreds of cars
school
that he was
buses
about to
something.
Jump over. And I believe there was fire and a tunnel involved or something. But anyway, and my mom and my sister came down, and they had their coffee and their hot chocolate and their snacks, and they said, oh, you can't finish watching this. We have to watch The Sound of Music. It's going to be on right away.
You said the who of what
and
now?
I was so annoyed, and I was so mad, and they made me change the channel, and I've been grateful ever since.
It's sad that Evel Knievel wasn't in The Sound of Music.
Yeah, you know, and really to perpetuate
Ooh, good.
The emotions of the first time I ever saw it, I should really always watch an Evel Knievel special before I watch The Sound of Music.
As you may all know out there, the dollar coin in Canada is called the loonie, and I think for the use of perpetuate, Michelle gets a dollar.
Oh, you're giving me an...
Oh. Well,
yay,
yeah,
okay, thanks. I'll pocket that. Yeah. So anyway, The Sound of Music. Oh dear.
Yeah.
I lost it.
Michelle has put the iPad to sleep. Good night, iPad.
So, of course, it's the classic with Julie Andrews and Christopher Plummer and seven children of random names. And lots of awesome songs. Edelweiss, My Favorite Things, Climb Every Mountain, Do-Re-Mi.
So, Michelle,
going on 17.
Where did The Sound of Music originate? Where did it come from? Is it based on anything?
Well, yes, it is, actually.
Yes, Kent. Funny you should ask.
It was based on the true story of the Von Trapp family. Who were from Austria,
lived in Austria,
and the father was a... Now, I'm not sure how... if the stepmom aspect was part of it, and she was going to be a nun, or if that was all made up, I don't know.
Okay.
But the family did exist, and they did all sing together, and they did leave Austria when he was commissioned to join the Nazi forces, because he didn't want to.
And he was a naval captain.
Yes, and I believe it's also true that they climbed over the mountains...
They climbed every mountain, didn't they?
On foot, because the borders had been closed, and they came to, I believe, to the United States.
Okay.
And, if I am not mistaken, there is a book of some sort, probably more than one, where you can read the true story of...
If that's interesting to you, but of course we're talking about the movie now.
Well, you know, I might be interested.
Okay, we'll find it later.
Anyway, the movie version of the true story, which also eventually was made into a Broadway musical, before or after, I'm not really sure. But anyway, the movie version was filmed on location in Salzburg, Austria, which is apparently where they lived, but also in Bavaria, which is in southern Germany, kind of ironically. And also at the Century Fox Studios in California.
Mm-hmm.
It won a total of 5 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, in 1965, and is one of the most popular musicals ever produced.
No kidding.
The cast album was nominated for a Grammy Award for Album of the Year.
Cool.
Must not have won. Adjusted for inflation, it made just over $1 billion domestically.
$1 billion.
Putting it 3rd on the list of all-time inflation-adjusted box office hits.
Mother of pearl.
Behind Gone with the Wind and Star Wars.
Wow.
In 2001, the United States Library of Congress selected the film for preservation in the National Film Registry, as it was deemed culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant.
Nice.
Or
D, all of the above.
Yes. Of course, music by Rodgers and Hammerstein. And
directed by Robert Wise, famous Hollywood director.
Yeah. And Julie Andrews was quite early on in her career. Ironically, she filmed this movie shortly after she had her first child. So,
well,
she at least knew something about kids.
That's
right. She was going to play a nanny.
She had one of her own.
Yes. So basically, I think most people know about this movie, and
we've
both seen it before.
Yes.
It's a great movie.
By the way,
it has absolutely nothing to do with Christmas.
Yeah, that's the
and
weird
there's
part.
Not one Christmas reference in it,
yeah.
But it still feels like Christmas because it's been on TV many years.
That's Christmas and the Sound of Music being very, very good to you.
Yes, thank you. You can move on to the next
one.
Yeah,
historically accurate books and movies, and there's no animated film yet, but there probably will be. I don't know.
Oh, there we go. Books.
Interesting. It's been obviously culturally significant. In the book The Dark Tower by Stephen King, someone reads The Collector, which is related to... Collector is, I think, the film it was based... or the book it was based on. Perhaps. Anyway.
No. Move on.
So there you go. What else? No, that's good. So, weird. I just randomly jumped to a totally different page. So that is The Sound of Music. Obviously, if you haven't seen it, it's well worth your time. It is approximately 3 hours. So be prepared.
Or watch it in 2 sittings.
Or wear adult diapers. But it's excellent. My favorite non-traditional Christmas movie is Die Hard.
Yes.
You say, I hear you saying now, but Kent, Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. I beg to differ. It absolutely is. From the sounds of jingle bells to the music throughout to...
Merry Christmas spray painted on the wall in one of the scenes, which we picked out.
Now I have a gun. Ho, ho, ho. Yeah, it's just all good.
Well, it takes place at Christmas.
And
there's Christmas trees, and there's...
Exactly. 1988 American action film, probably one of the top 5 action films of all time, I would argue, and certainly a standout of the 80s, and many films have borrowed, and it actually spawned an entire series, which is not a big surprise to fans. So it was released in 88, and the funny part is July of 88, so not even released at Christmas time. It follows Officer John McClane as he goes to visit his estranged wife in California at her new job. An organized group of quote-unquote terrorist thieves take over the office tower that she works in, the Nakatomi Plaza, and... John McClane, her husband, comes to the rescue and keeps these guys under control, and ultimately is the driving force behind taking them out and foiling their robbery attempt. So, as Michelle mentioned, the plot does take place on Christmas Eve. There's a big party going on, big staff party, and the crooks come in, lock the building down, and action film mania ensues.
You know, it's funny that there's... work staff party is on Christmas Eve, because who doesn't want to spend Christmas Eve with all of their coworkers?
That's right.
And in their office clothes.
I think fair to say that lots of offices either close down early, like most of the corporations I've worked for close early afternoon, and then you just go home.
Yeah,
so
but that's okay. It was a movie.
For fans of the movie, you're gonna know all this already. But directed by John McTiernan, great action director. Produced by Lawrence Gordon and Joel Silver, also very well known. Based on a book, Nothing Lasts Forever by Roderick Thorpe, which every so often I keep looking for because I'd like to read it, and I've never been able to find it. So if anybody knows of it or has a copy that they want to just send me for Christmas, bless you. Stars Bruce Willis and Alan Rickman. Fabulous. Fabulous actors.
Alan Rickman gets all the great lines.
Oh, and Bruce Willis and Alan Rickman just still look great, and they're still at the top of their game when it comes to acting, and very much enjoy them. Also featured legendary ballet dancer Alexander Gudinov, who's been in other films as well. Not recently, I don't think. Music by Michael Kamen. The music is very, very recognizable and familiar, and I'll go into that in a sec. Cinematography by a young man named John DeBont, who went on to direct Speed and has since become a great director in his own right. Short, relatively short movie, just over an hour and a half. No, 2 hours, never mind. Budget of $28 million and box office, I would assume this is to date, of $138.7 million. Still seems low.
But it didn't do as well as The Sound of Music.
No. Also, other great great acting jobs done by Reggie Val Johnson, Bonnie Bedelia as Holly McLean, William Atherton as Richard Thornburg, who is also in the first Ghostbusters film and plays a similar hateable character in that.
Oh, and just a side note, it pays to watch this movie with somebody who understands German.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I took German in university, so I was kind of chuckling because some of the translations are not exactly right. But it was, I think it was, well, it sounds like it was helpful for you that when I heard certain things, I could say, oh, he just said this.
Yeah, because there's never any subtitles.
No. And what they do, like, there's one part where Alan Rickman's character speaks German to one of the other guys, and he says, basically says, shoot the windows. And but that's not what he says in English. And the guy doesn't seem to understand, so he goes, shoot the glass. So he shoots out all the windows, and that's, of course, when John in his bare feet gets all this bloody mess. So it was Fox Plaza in L.A. that portrayed Nakatomi Plaza in the film. Great, just so many great lines. Like, this is from the Schwarzenegger, early Schwarzenegger film era, where phrases like stick around, I'll be back, and of course, yippee-ki-yay, mother, insert expletive, famous lines, and just great all around. I mentioned the music features very prominently from Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, featured in Kamen's score throughout the film, to some really cool things that he did, thematic variations on Singing in the Rain, Ode to Joy done in a minor key to make it sound a bit sinister and bad guy music, kind of. John McTiernan also said that a lot of the pieces of music that he chose were his homage to Stanley Kubrick's Clockwork Orange, and oh, there's lots of different stuff, and the music has been carried on throughout the series as well. Now, as the film is set in Christmas, the score also features sleigh bells in some cues, as well as the Christmas pop standard Winter Wonderland, which we mentioned in our survey information, and two 1987 pop songs, one where Argyle, the limo driver, is sitting in the limo, and the rap song by Run DMC, Christmas in Hollis, is playing on the stereo. The end credits start out with Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow. One more, I missed one. And then Beethoven's Ninth Symphony again. So the music is fantastic. Interesting to note, too, that they used two pieces of music in a temp track that ended up staying. And one was from John Scott's score for the film Man on Fire. And the other one was from Aliens, James Horner little piece of music that got used at the end of Die Hard. So there you go. Very popular soundtrack, very famous, recognizable soundtrack. And it was released by Varese Saraband in February 2002, but was limited to only 3,000 copies. So if you're a fan of Die Hard, you may have it. I'm a fan of Die Hard. I don't think I have it. So I'd like to see it and hear it. Based on 50 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, we didn't get into the reviews of Sound of Music because it's a legend. So is Die Hard, but for different reason. Rated very highly on Rotten Tomatoes, 8.2 out of 10, 94% overall. And then, yeah, the phrase die hard something something became popular. Die Hard on a Bus was what people referred to as speed. The Rock was called Die Hard on an Island. So, yeah, Roger Ebert wasn't a huge fan of the film, but so what? The film was nominated for 4 Academy Awards: Best Sound Effects Editing, Best Film Editing, Best Sound, and Best Visual Effects. And it, as I mentioned, spawned 3 popular sequels. And in 2001, Die Hard was listed as number 39 on the American Film Institute's 100 Years, 100 Thrills, a list of America's most heart-pounding films. Yes, Hans Gruber, the character that Alan Rickman plays in Die Hard, was added to AFI's 100 Years, 100 Heroes and Villains list in 2003. Yeah, and there you go. One of the greatest movie lines of all time was the Yippee-ki-yay one. And, oh, funny. In 2010, Die Hard was voted by Empire Magazine as the greatest Christmas film of all time. Yikes. Yikes.
It is a fun one to watch.
And finally, in July 2007, Bruce Willis donated the undershirt that he wore in the film to the National Museum of American History at the Smithsonian Institution. So that just shows you a little bit how culturally significant and how much part of pop culture that has become.
Yes.
So there you go. Sound of Music and Die Hard. Watch them together. You won't be sorry. Now, Walt Tanner, who's a good friend, become a good friend of ours and a regular listener of The Couch since the very beginning in 2007, specifically requested that we review 3 animated films that were done in the early 70s by Reader's Digest and are actually Canadian. 2 were narrated by Richard Chamberlain, and 1 was narrated by Christopher Plummer. And those are The Selfish Giant, The Little Mermaid, and The Happy Prince. And they are all based on Hans Christian Andersen stories, I believe.
No.
No. Never mind.
2 of them are based on Oscar Wilde's stories.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and you interviewed Emily. What do we need to talk about that you didn't talk about in the interview?
The narration.
Okay.
I forgot to talk about that.
So, you mentioned
The Happy Prince and The
Little Mermaid? Selfish Giant.
Selfish Giant.
Yes.
Were narrated by Richard Chamberlain.
Yes.
And The Happy Prince
by Christopher Plummer.
By Christopher Plummer.
Yes.
Yeah.
So these are old films, or old cartoons. They're probably half an hour or less each. They are almost impossible to find. And I looked online a little bit. My brothers and I remembered The Selfish Giant so fondly from our childhood that we bought a VHS copy of it about 4 years ago, and I think it cost $40. So these are very hard to find, but they're fantastic nonetheless. So you and Emily are talking a bit about that, and we'll go to that now.
All right. So Emily and I are here. We have a couple things to talk about. We had an email from Walt Tanner, our listener out east in Canada. I believe he is way out east. I can't remember exactly which province, which is really bad, but I think he's in New Brunswick, maybe? One of the really eastern provinces. Anyway, so Walt sent us an email, and this is the important part. And he remembers watching some old Reader's Digest cartoons that were produced by, I believe, a Canadian film company. And they used to be on TV every Christmas when he was growing up. And he thought it would be interesting if I saw them and maybe our kids saw them. And did a little review of them. So let's throw a little Canadian content in the mix this week. So the first one that we watched was called The Little Mermaid. Huh. Fancy that title, will ya? But this isn't the one you're thinking of. This is The Little Mermaid in its original form, based more closely on the book by Hans Christian Andersen. Mm-hmm. So Emily, we watched The Little Mermaid. What did you think of it?
It reminded me a lot of the Disney version, and
in the beginning, anyway, right?
Yeah, and then it started to change, and it got more weird, but it was really neat, and I liked the animation, and It was nice.
It was released, or I guess released is the word, in 1974. So you need to keep that in mind when you're looking at the animation and some of the song selections.
Yes.
The songs were interesting, some of them.
Yes. Quite interesting.
But it is fairly similar to the Disney version, up until the point where she doesn't win the prince's love and she throws herself into the sea and dies. Yeah, not so much like the Disney version anymore at that point. But, I mean, it's probably maybe a little more true to life. Everything doesn't always have a fairy tale ending, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. The other thing that was a little bit different is that mermaids don't have a soul in,
yeah,
based on the book. And so in order for her to win her soul, she had to win the love of a human prince. Well, of the prince, but just a human, I think, would have been fine. So she doesn't manage to succeed, and so she not only now in this version, and I don't think this is necessarily true to the Hans Christian Andersen version, but I haven't read it. She, are you going to talk?
Yes.
Stay with me. She, after she throws herself into the sea, she ends up turning into like a ghost, a spirit. Did you get?
Person. Yeah, and then she. Like, if a child cries, like...
Okay, well, she goes up into the sky with the other spirits. Yeah, and the whole point of this was that she could still gain a soul if she... What was it?
If she, earned another soul or something?
Yeah, so she had to stay up in heaven making rainbows, and then...
The way he said that.
If every time a child was good, it took a year off of her purgatory, if you will. And every time a child was bad, it added a day. Right? Or every time a child shed a tear, it added a day.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know how true to the Hans Christian Andersen book that part was, because I don't... it's been a long time since I've read it. But anyway... it was interesting, and it was, it was a good one, I think, overall. I would watch it again. Would you watch it again?
Yeah, probably, yeah. It was good. I thought it was gonna be sad, and it was, sort of, but I enjoyed it. It was good.
Okay. All right, so on to The Happy Prince.
Now, second one we watched.
The next two that actually, maybe we'll do these in actual order here. So The Selfish Giant actually came first. And both The Selfish Giant and The Happy Prince were books, short stories, by Oscar Wilde. And The Selfish Giant was the first one.
I love The Selfish Giant.
And it was actually produced by Potterton Productions, which is a Canadian-based film company, and it first aired on Canadian television in November 1972. I wasn't even born yet.
Neither was I.
Neither were you. But, anyway, I thought The Selfish Giant was fairly well done. If you don't know the story of The Selfish Giant, basically it's, you want to talk
giant,
about it?
Yeah, the giant... builds a wall to keep the children out of his garden. So then, since the children, like, the trees miss the children, and the birds miss the children, and all the plants miss the children, so it turns winter. And so, like, it's always winter. No other seasons come, and then all of a sudden, spring returns because the children find a hole in the wall that, and so they crawled through, and so the trees were all happy, and then the selfish giant realizes how selfish he's being, and so
he tears down the wall.
Yeah, he tears down the wall, and he basically
spends the rest of his life playing with the children.
Yeah, and
he's a reformed giant.
Yeah, and then in the end, the little boy who he helped into a tree a long time ago, which was his best friend since the boy disappeared after a long time, he found the boy one day, and he was so happy. He came and saw him, and then he saw nail prints in his hands and feet, and he got all upset and mad, like, who hurt him and stuff. And then he said that, like, those prints are from love and stuff.
The little boy did.
Yeah, and then he takes him to heaven, and...
Yeah, and that was the story. So, it is very nicely animated. The depiction of the characters of winter is kind of cool.
Yeah, that was interesting.
There's snow, frost, the north wind, who looks like a Viking with...
Person,
with, leg warmers on.
And the hail is like a knight.
And he dances around on the prince giant's roof. I believe I had seen this one before. I know I had.
Yeah, same. I love The Selfish Giant. I got a book of this for, I can't remember when.
We do have a copy of this book.
Yes.
And so we knew the story.
It's very good. I like it. It's one of my favorite stories.
And it's, it does have a Christian element to it, which makes it sort of considered Christian literature. Now, the story of the Happy Prince, Dad watched with you as well. But he's not here, so we're going to talk about this one. So, what did you think of the Happy Prince? We hadn't seen it before, either of us, right?
Yeah, it was interesting. The story is about this swallow who, instead of flying to Egypt for the winter, stays with the statue of the Happy Prince, and then the Happy Prince is crying, and the sparrow's kind of like, why are you crying? You're supposed to be happy. And
you're a statue.
Yeah. And so the Happy Prince says, like, there are people that are poor, and these, like, there's a boy that's sick, and there's a man that's cold, and there's a little girl and stuff.
He wants to help everybody.
Yeah, and he gives his two sapphire eyes and the ruby in his sword to those three people, and then...
Well, the swallow becomes his messenger.
Yeah.
And takes the stones to the people who need the money so that they can have a happier life.
Yeah, and so then... And then all of a sudden, he says to peel the gold off him, and because he's made of gold, so the bird takes pieces of gold off him and takes it to the poor and needy people, and
pretty soon the statue's not looking so great anymore.
Yeah, it's all grayish, and so they tear it down, and they decide to make a new one, and so then, in like close to the end, the swallow, like he's really cold, and I think the cold weather killed him, but he died, and the Happy Prince says, I'm going now, and the Happy Prince says, okay, I'm glad you're finally going to Egypt, and the bird says, it's not to Egypt I'm going, and then he falls and dies,
and the prince's heart breaks, and then that's kind of the end of the story. So, this one was released in 1974, also by Potterton Productions, and I believe it was probably released in 74 or 75, also probably in November. I don't see that here, but that would be my guess. Yeah. So they did sort of become a tradition for children growing up in the 70s and 80s to watch these around Christmas time.
Yeah.
And thanks for sending us those files, and we enjoyed watching them.
Yes, we
and
did.
It's time, I think, for us to go. So we'll talk to you later, and thanks for joining us, Emily. Have a great day.
Okay, bye.
There you go.
And one thing I wanted to mention, I have been texting back and forth with the Big C, and haven't yeah, Claus, Santa.
Oh.
Haven't had a chance to actually connect on the phone. We tried to Skype at one point, but just wasn't working. So
there was interference.
Yeah, so I believe it was Comet related, and I don't mean the reindeer. So he actually left a voicemail, ironically. We were just kind of exchanging voicemails, couldn't pin each other down, but he left a voice message. So I just wanted to share that with you, and we'll go to that right away. But everybody have a great Christmas. Really enjoy your time over the holidays. Try to make it memorable for all the right reasons so that you don't end up hating Christmas carols or wishing you didn't spend time with family. But take it in a nice low gear if you can as well, and just enjoy the things as they happen, and try not to get overwhelmed. But that's been another year of View from the Couch. And
yes.
We will not be back until Wednesday, January 11th with a new show. We're taking a little bit of holidays and have a lot of stuff on the go. So a very happy Merry Christmas and New Year, and happy holidays to people who are not celebrating Christmas, if you're celebrating Hanukkah and so on. All the best to everyone. Be safe, have fun, and we will catch you in 2012.
That's right.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hey, you guys, you want to knock off on there? Just give me a second here. Just take five. All right. Oh. Hey, Kent, this is your old buddy, SC. How are you doing? I just taking a minute here to answer your email, and just wish you a Merry Christmas. Yeah, we got that out of the way. Okay. You had a couple of questions for me. Let's see if I can answer these real quick for you. Most popular gift requests, I think this year is probably a lot of electronics, you know, a lot of movies, games, stuff like that. Just nothing out of the ordinary. My favorite carol, don't have one. Silent Night, usually, if I'm pressed, you know. Do I get anything from Mrs. C or the elves? Yeah, space. Lots of space, especially after all the job, all the hard work's done. And let me see, anything else I can think of? No, not really. So listen, you and Michelle and the kids have a great Christmas and a happy New Year. And don't stay up too late, because I'm going to be coming down the chimney. Oh, that's right. You don't have a chimney, so I'll just have to figure something else out. Oh. All right, get back to work, you lazy bums. Come on.
You've been listening to View from the Couch, a DVD Verdict podcast. View from the Couch is available exclusively on DVDverdict.com. Watch for new episodes every week. Thanks for your continued support. Kent and Michelle appreciate it. Be sure to visit DVDverdict.com for the latest in DVD and theatrical release reviews, DVD release information, talent interviews, event coverage, and much, much more.